What I want to say, hopefully we get these technical issues resolved for individuals.
Are you recording?
Yes, I am recording. I actually just started recording. I forgot. So that was psychic of you. Basically, what I had started saying was that we're at the point where we can investigate what it's like to engage our ordinary experience with this quality of free and open inquiry, not accepting positions, not accepting conditioning, really being open to other possibilities. And since that's so, and I think I said this in the orientation, I feel like I really want to be hearing from some of you, either on the phone, or if you're just listening on the web, you could type some things in. I see a note here saying that I'm not very loud, but I can move the phone a little closer. That's about all that I can do.
Something just came to my mind. Is it Michael?
Okay, great.
Did you want some remark now?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Go ahead.
It's a nice feature of this vision is that a little bit of understanding gets you a little bit of benefit. Like reading Christopher's post, I can't help but notice he's more going into mindfulness than I'm able to these days. But just becoming a little bit aware of here I am in the flow of life, and I've got all these tendencies and positions, and it's not like I have a dramatic revelation or insight or transformation, but my life's just broadened out a bit, and it's I really appreciate that.
Okay, good. Do you have any specific example, maybe something you noticed during the week, or? Maybe not. You just said it.
I noticed that exercise. That exercise, chapter 5, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming aware of the self as being part of the mix of whatever is going on.
Mm-hmm.
There were some times when that made me feel more empathetic. Like what comes up for me is there's a choice between being avoiding everything and not thinking about it, and then getting caught up and over emotional and helpless, and just seeing that that's how I operate, I can kind of see, well, what really helps is to feel empathy toward the people that are bothering me.
And so you're saying you're kind of letting go of the position of the self, which is making judgments, and being more open to what else
is. Mm-hmm. They confront me with things, a sense of helplessness, because I can't affect a whole lot of things I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just seeing that that's the role of the self, to be helpless and because it's trying to control more than it can, softens it all, and there's maybe some other openings that happen then, like, well, if I just think of the suffering of others, then maybe I'll be present.
Okay, good. Anybody else want to comment on the kinds of things you're noticing as we do this kind of free and open inquiry?
Hayward.
Okay.
When I think of whatever experience I'm having as a way of knowing, and I recognize it as a way of knowing, then if I take a breath and exhale, I exhale with the intention of opening that way of knowing.
Okay.
So that it doesn't quite construct or construe the way that I had been perceiving it.
Mm-hmm.
I generally tend to think of doing that when I'm perceiving it in a way that's not comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. You know, one of the things that you brought up, Hayward, a number of times from your own practice and as a therapist, I think, is focusing on the breath as a way, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but as a way of releasing some of the positions we take, some of the holding.
The breath gets connected with space.
Okay. Yeah. No, that certainly makes good sense. And there are practices in the TSK books that encourage that. And other places, Rinpoche has written about it too. Let me just make a comment about that. It seems to me that a lot of the time, you know, we're relying on conceptual knowledge. There's a place in this chapter where Rinpoche talks about letting go of our reliance. At the top of page 292, he says, conceptual analysis gives way to more direct forms of inquiry. Now, a lot of times we think that the way to conduct inquiry is conceptually, you know, to try to figure things out, to make sense of things. We've talked about those different aspects of how we know. And the question is, or is there a different kind of inquiry? And certainly we're back with the idea that there is a different kind of inquiry, that it's not conceptual. And the question is, how do we get to that non-conceptual mode? How do we keep from just automatically applying the tool that we've learned, that you could say as an individual, you know, as a self, as an ego, which is that kind of conceptual mode of analysis. And there are a variety of ways to do that. I think it's a really fruitful question to ask. But one answer is to connect to the breath, or simply to connect to our embodiment, to be present in our experience. Because, you know, conceptuality, being conceptual, is almost by definition not being present in our experience. So, you know, when Christopher talks about mindfulness, I think he's going in that same direction. And what you're saying now, Hayward, I think goes in that direction. And you know, anything that kind of loosens up the quality of judgment, of taking a position, all those things go in that direction. And you know, part of what I think we really want to be doing in exploring what TSK offers, what the vision offers, is finding ways to engage our experience more directly. And that part of it is kind of like meditation, you know, because after all, watching the breath is a very fundamental meditative practice. So that part of it is like meditation. Then the aspect of TSK that is different from that, or at least, you know, deeply explores another dimension of that, is when we are in touch with our experience, whether it's through kind of meditative practice or simply through having learned how to activate knowing within the experience, then to really continue with the inquiry, you know, to be in kind of, you could say, in discovery mode, you know. The image that comes to mind, and I'm sorry, this is probably too technical for many people, and it's too technical for me. I don't really know much about it. But if you have a laptop computer, a notebook computer, and you're walking down the street with it, and as it goes along, there's all these people who have wireless networks, and the computer discovers each wireless network in turn. Now, it may not have access to it because there's some password protection, but I don't want to go too far with that analogy, but all I'm suggesting is that whatever our experience is, we can always be in discovery mode like that. You know, we can always be looking to make the connection in our experience. That kind of discovery mode is a lot of what TSK is about. Cool. Anybody else want to talk about what they've been finding now as they explore TSK? Explore their own experience is really what I should say.
This is Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the two, actually. The one is about what you were talking about, exploring something that you already know, getting a little bit deeper into it. I'm a visual person, so what's happening is that I see all kind of visual structures. I'm specialized in working with people with problems of the hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I know a lot about hands, and when I tune into it in a different way, suddenly the hand is becoming so much more spacious, and it's almost like it's filled of light, of energy. It's getting really big, and you can almost enter into the structures in a very different way than what we normally do. And so this was one experience of me.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is that there seems to be some sort of a beam of a very light, some sort of a very beige, opaque a kind of energy that seems to have some knots and wires when conceptual knowledge comes into it. Well, that's my... Anyway, that's the way I experienced it this week.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So I'm not sure I understand. You say there's this kind of light, and then when you start operating in a conceptual mode, it gets, there are knots and wires. It kind of gets tangled up. Is that right?
Well, yeah. It seems like you know, there's getting a structure into a very fresh, opaque kind of energy or light or whatever you want to call it. I call it light, but it's more like it's energy. It's more like particles. I can't really describe it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as if there are getting structures into it, and these structures, they do something with this light energy. It, you know, it's like there's a change in it. It blocks it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's...
So when I feel motion and I tune into this light.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can also dissolve it.
Right.
One way or another, it's possible to just step into the energy of the light, and then the structures just, you know, they dissolve, and you know the emotion changes and the sensations in the body change as well.
Okay.
But it's what I experience.
Yeah.
I didn't work with the breath.
Okay. Well, what you work with sounds very fruitful, so that's fine. Of course, one of the things that gets pointed out in the TSK vision again and again is, you know, if there's a kind of an energy that carries a knowing quality, and I think that those two things always go together in TSK, the energy or the immediacy of experience carries a knowing quality, and tuning into that is really important. And then there are certain kinds of reactions we have, or certain things that come up in terms of our usual structures or the positions and conditions we take, such as concepts, such as emotions, and it seems as though they block that energy in some way. So then you have the blockage, so what do you do with that? Well, maybe you can release it, maybe, you know, there are different ways of kind of going back into your experience. But in part, what TSK points out is that those blockages are also just made of energy and light. And if you experience them that way, then they lose their ability, you could say, to block, you know, and they simply become part of the experience. In the broadest sense, you could say the same thing about the self. You know, exercise 5 that Michael was referring to earlier, where you look at the self as part of experience, the self has a tendency to block off experience. That's kind of its role in a way, because it's always taking a position and it's always asserting certain kinds of conditions to be in operation, the ones that establish its own identity. But if you see the self and that whole tendency of the self as themselves an expression of an underlying energy or knowing, you know, one of these words that we use that don't really work, I mean, that, you know, are not completely successful as descriptions. But if you see the self in that way, then it loses its ability to block off the rest of experience. It's just something else that's happening. Now that's a big jump in a way to see the self as something else that's happening. And it's always a kind of a little jump when we have something that we think of as real and solid and substantial, and then we find a way in which we can see through it, in the way we were talking last week about seeing through experience. You know, it becomes transparent, but also it becomes the vehicle for more knowledge. Those little moments, you know, sometimes they're big jumps, sometimes they're little jumps, sometimes they're very striking, and sometimes they're you know, nothing, they don't feel like anything special, but nonetheless, they're very different from what we're used to. Those are all ways of exploring the TSK experience.
Okay.
Yes.
And Jack, I'll try to do exercise number 35.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, I had a lot of ambiguities. Am I doing it right and so forth? Or am I assuming, for example, when it says, imagine entertain a positive or negative feeling. So I went to a scenario that it was really positive. And it said you could add thoughts or images and so forth. So I added the story to it, which had images and had the thoughts in it. So it even got more intensified. And then it said, well, shift this for its opposite.
Right.
At this point now, I have to really assume what is this opposite of my own subjective knowing or what have you. And right there, I was very unconfident that do I even know what the opposite of this is, or is it correct?
Mm-hmm.
So because it was very, it invited me to go to its qualities of how expansive and light I felt. And then I went to the opposite of it, how opposite of expansive, but I'm getting crumbled and crushed and really lack of space, which is often when I'm, I suppose, angry or very, very depressed and hurt. So I would go there. But then there are parts of this exercise that is just really, I'm stretching myself really to my limit to really understand what it's saying. Because it says the content. Somebody says, focus on the content of the feeling. I mean, what is the content of a feeling? I know what the content of a story is, but what is the content of a feeling?
Okay, right.
So since you brought this up and you juxtaposed or compared it with the exercise of positioning, I didn't even get how this would parallel with positioning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd be
mm-hmm.
kind to kind of point out to these mm-hmm. issues, I would be thankful.
Sure. Well, first of all, it sounds as though you were exploring it in a very fruitful way, and that, you know, the kinds of experiences that you were describing just now, I think that's exactly what the exercise is suggesting we evoke. The word content, you're right, you know, that it's different with respect to feelings than it is with respect to thoughts, say. And the exercise invites both those levels. There's the feeling, and then there's maybe the associated thoughts and images, and that would be more of our usual sense of what counts as content. But I think the content part of the feeling, I think what's being referred to here, is the label. You know, if somebody asked you at that moment what you're feeling, and you said, I'm feeling very happy. Now, you said something different. You said, I'm feeling light and expansive. And I think that that's going beyond content in the way that the exercise is describing it. And it's actually going in a very good direction because the exercise, I mean, a very fruitful, useful direction. Because the exercise says, you know, contact not only the content of the feeling, but also its specific qualities of sharpness, orientation, aliveness. And your terms of light and, I can't remember, energy or openness, those are also kind of beyond the content. The content is more, if you start at the beginning of the exercise and it says, entertain, you know, bring up a positive or negative feeling. So what is it that makes you say, well, this is a positive feeling? That, whatever it is that lets you say, this positive feeling, that's the content. And then beyond that are these dimensions that are more subtle and that we don't usually notice or think about. I'm going to try to tie that in for a moment to a comment that Lois put in, typed into the chat area. Lois, you said there are more ways that I can begin to get at something that happens within or without me, and all I have to do is take the time. I think that's an example of going beyond content. You know, if you start off with the feeling, you build it up, you make it richer, and what you do is discover additional dimensions. So I've always found that a helpful way to talk about it, additional dimensions to experience beyond just the content of it.
So. Thank you. And how does this connect to positioning? I even failed right there. I'm pretty, really stressed. How is this doing this over, like jumping from positive or negative in the sense of feeling? How does that going to aid me in the positioning or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I thought this was really connected. That's why you put it at the end of your guide.
Right.
But I'm still not there.
Okay. Well, you, Sudhabe, you have a tendency to think that you failed at things, which first of all, is a position, right? You know, I'm the one who failed. and second, you know, the way you describe your experience, it always sounds as though there is, you know, you have gone to a level of it that is very fruitful. And the whole issue is always what's fruitful. So there really isn't any failure in TSK, but you could say there's more or less fruitful, or more or less fruitful approaches. But the positioning and the content, that's pretty much the same thing. You know, you start off with this position. You say, I'm happy, or I'm angry. That's the content of the feeling. And it's the position that you're taking. And really, yes, you're right. The connection is very strong. The point of the exercise is to investigate whether it's possible to drop that position, to just let go of it. Because one of the characteristics of a position is that, you know, you have the feeling that you got there and it was kind of hard work, you know, and you're not ready to let go of it. Or even if you wanted to let go of it, you'd have to go somewhere else and take another position, you know. If you imagine you climb a mountain and then you're at the top of that mountain and you say, this is my position, and someone says, well, now take a different position. Based on the way you got there by climbing the mountain, you would say, well, that means I have to climb all the way back down this mountain and find another mountain and climb all the way up that mountain. And that's the only way to take another position. This exercise is saying, no, you know, positions don't have that kind of substance. They're not like mountains. I don't have another image in mind, but so you can switch them. You can go from one to another, you know. It's as though it's more like using a computer mouse, you know. I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm thinking about computers today. But you know, if you imagine that you're looking at a computer screen and there are two mountains in this, there's a scene on this computer screen which has two mountains in it, and you say, go from one mountain to the next, you know, you don't have to go through this process of finding the trail and making your way down the mountain. As long as you're talking about the computer screen, you just take the mouse and move it from the top of one mountain to the top of the other mountain. And that kind of immediate switching, that's what that exercise is about. And it really is challenging our usual understanding of what a position is.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I wanted to call attention. This is actually, we've gone off, and I think that's great. I mean, I really appreciate the comments you're making, because I think this is where we want to be focusing in the next several weeks, is how are you exploring these things for yourself, whether it's through specific exercises or just things that you notice in your experience. But I did want to call attention to just a kind of a simple, just one sentence, really, on page 291. It's actually at the end of the first sentence of the reading. Rinpoche says, he's talking about free and open inquiry, and he says, free and open inquiry will foster clarity in observation and analysis. And that's one of those phrases where you may think to yourself, you know, because I write a lot anyway, I tend to think to myself, sometimes you say something just in order to finish up the sentence in a nice way. You know, it doesn't mean all that much. So you might say, clarity and observation and analysis, well, okay, that's easy enough to say. But what I want to suggest is that it's very interesting to explore the relationship between observation and analysis. And that's a place where you might look over the next week. So I wanted to give you just an example to maybe open that up a little bit. One of the things that I noticed in this past week that may be related to the kind of inquiry and that we're doing, one of the things that I noticed was there were many things I saw, a number of things I saw, that struck me as really beautiful, things that I don't notice so often or pay attention to so often. And, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, I remember looking at some flowers, and I was just really struck at how beautiful they were. And that's something I might notice at some particular time, but very often I don't notice. I just go right past, you know, and I don't pay any attention. So suppose you notice yourself experiencing the beauty of something, the beauty of flowers, or another thing I was noticing was birds. They just struck me. I had a number of experiences looking at birds and just being struck by how beautiful, elegant and beautiful they were. And so you say to yourself, well, that's interesting. I haven't noticed before, or it's unusual for me to notice. Here's something I see quite often, but now I'm struck by how beautiful it is. So the question that I want to raise is, where is the beauty in that observation? You know, you say this flower, let's say, is very beautiful. Well, the flower itself hasn't changed in any way. And the flower in itself is not really beautiful. It's not really beautiful. If you imagine something like the flower in itself, that's a conceptual structure to say the flower in itself, because it's always the flower that I see. So the flower that I see is beautiful. But where is that beauty? Is it in my seeing, or is it in the flower? Am I interpreting it as being beautiful? I think none of those possible answers seem to me to be very fruitful or interesting. And this is an example of something that's difficult to put into words. That's a point that Rinpoche makes in this chapter. But one way to say it might be that you're observing a dimension of beauty that you don't ordinarily experience. And then maybe observing is not quite the right word either. You know, you're experiencing something, and the word that works there is that you're experiencing beauty. And yes, in a sense, it belongs to the flower, but it also belongs to your experience. And really, if you start to look at that, it doesn't belong anywhere at all. It's just an aspect or an element of the experience. So I don't think I've really said that in a very helpful way, but what I'm trying to point to is that there's the observation. You know, Rinpoche talks here about clarity in observation and clarity in analysis. And that makes it sound kind of analytic and conceptual, but it's not. It's a kind of an openness, so that, you know, because there is a clarity in your observation, you could say, you experience the beauty. So whether the word observation really works anymore, or whether the word analysis works anymore, I don't know, maybe it doesn't. Maybe that's not, maybe those aren't the right words. But there is something about clarity which can go in each of those directions, and then it can open up in new ways too. I'm trying to point to that, and back to that sentence that I mentioned earlier at the top of page 292, where Rinpoche talks about conceptual analysis giving way to more direct forms of inquiry. So we don't usually think of the experience of beauty, for instance, as a form of inquiry. But in the kind of inquiry that we're doing now, I think that beauty is a form of inquiry, or that inquiry is inseparable from the experience of beauty. And it might not be the experience of beauty, it might be the experience, I suppose you could say, the, you know, the experience of absolute disgust. I mean, that's possibly an alternative. We don't like to dwell on that one so much. All of these different possibilities. And Rinpoche says at the bottom of page 291, he says, there's so many worlds, right? He says, the sentence is, there are so many ways of being, so many different worlds, each with its own patterns of arising and becoming. And that's one of those sentences in TSK, or in this book, that just offers an incredible realm for reflection. You know, does he really mean worlds? Does he really literally mean that we, you know, that we inhabit different worlds from one moment to the next, and that free and open inquiry will let us enter those different worlds? Well, I think that's very worth exploring. You know, it's very good to ask that question. Maybe you decide that's a metaphor. Or maybe in some sense it's more fundamental than just a metaphor. And then when he says, each world has its own pattern of arising and becoming, that's also a remarkable place to explore, because we tend to think, you know, that things, there's one sequence. There's one way in which things arise, kind of a causal sequence. First there's this, and then there's that. But it may turn out that there's very, very different ways of arising and becoming. I was reading a book last night, and he makes the point that, let's say, you know, Christmas Day, 1 year, he says, is closer in time to Christmas the previous year, or even to Christmas 1,000 years ago, than some other day. You know, let's say, so Christmas is December 25th. So December 25th in the year 2000 is closer to the year, to December 25th in the year 2010, than December 20th, 2010 is. That's the point he's making. And I'm only bringing that up as an example that seems to reflect, or seems to relate to this question of arising and becoming. You know, that when you're in a Christmas Day world, you know, especially for people who care about Christmas, when you're in that world, the arising and becoming of that particular day has its own time, its own timing, that links it, you know, in a we talk about cyclical time instead of linear time. So this is an example of that. So that's just one example. There's a lot to explore. And when you're doing that kind of exploration, that's the kind of analysis, I think, the clarity of analysis that then transforms into a clarity of observation, so that new dimensions, new aspects of what it is that you're experiencing become available for observation. Now, observation is probably not the best word there. It's an ordinary word that we use, but it contains that syllable ob, which means against, you know, so it suggests that we're separate from the thing that we're looking at, and that whole issue of separation, that's part of what you could observe and analyze. So observation and analysis actually tend to melt into each other in a way that we don't normally think of, and yet it's good to be aware of the two dimensions. Okay, well, we're definitely we're at a good point to stop. In any event, we're going to stop. Next week we go back toward the beginning of love of knowledge. We've gone as far into this domain. We've kind of introduced the idea now, or are beginning to explore in a more immediate way this possibility for inquiry and knowing. And so now, actually, for the rest of the program, we want to continue to explore that. And as a guide into that, you know, we're not going to go further with the kind of conceptual analysis that Rinpoche goes on to develop in the last part of Love of Knowledge. That's very interesting and helpful. But we're going to go back to the beginning of Love of Knowledge and start to look at some more fundamental aspects of our experience in light of this possibility. So I'll try to clarify that a little bit in the orientation to next week's reading. Next week's reading starts right in the middle of a page. So I'll also just include, you know, I'll tell you what I had in mind where we start reading. So that's it for today. It's page 61. The reading is pages 61 to 64.